This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is Monica Perez here with a special guest who's hopping on to do a special report in the moment. I asked our new podcasting cohort and previous guest, Pasta, if he could clue us in on Haiti, and he said, not me, I know the guy. And this is the guy, Professor Danny Shaw. He is a professor of Latin American and Caribbean Studies at CUNY, which is the City University of New York. He's also an adjunct professor, lecturer at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, and does a lot of other things, speaks, writes, and coaches on boxing, nutrition, and actually something in your profile rings a bell for me. You were in the Golden Gloves and fought at Madison Square Garden as a heavyweight, and my brother did that too. But unlike you, he is not a sober coach and is no longer with us. But he lived hard, let's just say. But in any case, I remember seeing him fight in the Golden Gloves at Madison Square Garden, like in the 70s. I hate to date myself, but anyway, so you have quite an interesting, broad, and deep resume. Thank you so much for being here. And you're an expert in many, many areas. But today I wanted to hear about Haiti. So how are you? Thank you for coming.
Yes, us boxers train hard and go hard in life. That's a theme. Sorry to hear about your brother. Sounds like a legendary figure. I returned from Haiti last month. Things have really, been intense. And how unfortunate that it took this ridiculous, sensationalistic, racist headline about 48 hours ago about cannibalism among one of the gang leaders. It's just ridiculous. And I never got phone calls from so many continents and countries in one day. Haiti became the lead story. And that's consistent with the informational war on Haiti. We only hear about Haiti when it's chaos, when it's coups, when it's a kidnapped president, when it's disease. This whole charge of cannibalism reminded me of the 1980s. The Department of Health put out the infamous 4-H study saying that the four groups responsible for carrying the AIDS virus were hemophiliacs, homosexuals, heroin users, and Haitians. And the Haitian community, I know.
I'm from New York. Originally from Brooklyn, but I grew up in Rockland County. And I worked in the restaurant business, like I was a waitress for many years in the 80s, and in the kitchen, just about everybody was Haitian. And in the church we went to in Spring Valley, New York, just about everybody was Haitian. And I know they get terrible press. I know it's an impoverished country. And when I saw the coup that happened right after Biden took office, it seemed it had U.S. fingerprints all over it. And I just was reminded of the at least century of abuse that country has received from a lot of different fronts. But I mean, I even think back of Bush and Clinton both showed up there at the same time. Like, you know, you're in trouble when both of those guys are showing up. So yeah, I feel like they've just, and it's been one of the poorest countries in the world for a very long time. It's tragic.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned Spring Valley. Spring Valley is definitely one of the Haitian, the epicenters of Haitian migration. It's Southern Florida, number one, and then it's probably East Flatbush, Brooklyn. Boston's up there, but Spring Valley is probably fourth or fifth. So very interesting. Yeah, definitely when they put the Bush-Clinton tag team together, not for Haiti, but against Haiti with the earthquake donations in 2010, we knew it was going to be the next phase of this colonial treatment of Haiti. And sure enough, the Haitian people continue to ask, where are the billions and billions of dollars? It's a figure of some $14 billion that was donated by the quote-unquote international community. $1 billion came from the United States. And so little was actually done to rebuild for Haiti. 90% of that money was disappeared in the bureaucracies of the Red Cross and in the UN. So I think where to begin, you know, the most common word we hear in the press are gangs. Gangs have taken over Port-au-Prince. These are not gangs. These are paramilitaries. These are mercenaries. These are death squads. And what I did, I was documenting the people's resistance on the barricades, on the front lines, because the people are forced to defend themselves. There's very few active police agents. Historically, the Haitian National Police have been the agents of repression. In the 2021 rebellion before Jovenel Moïse was assassinated by Colombian paramilitaries and by...
Based in Miami.
The whole...
I mean...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the private security firms in Miami owned by a Colombian American citizen, connections to the DEA and to U.S. intelligence, and 23 Colombian paramilitaries in the middle of Haiti. And a little anecdote, you know, with the prison break, must have been about a week ago now, they also broke out those Colombians, about 4,000
oh,
plus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, listen to the punchline. So don't get
well,
excited.
Well, I mean, that's so pretty telling.
Well, so 4,000 prisoners are broken out. It's the paramilitaries that organized this. They want to show their strength versus the lack of strength of the Haitian state. I wouldn't say a failed state. I'd say a successful colonial state. And you had petty criminals and thieves, quote unquote thieves, you know, the prisoner, economic prisoners locked up for robbing or who knows what, who never saw a judge in 4, 5, 6 years. So thank goodness those innocent individuals were able to flee. You also had hardened gangsters and hardened rapists and murderers and the people who come from the ranks of these mercenaries. They also escaped the Haitian National Penitentiary. But when they stumbled upon the Colombians said, no, no, you know, we're going to stay right here. So the Colombians stayed there because they knew that if they left, people were going to remember. Because the Haitian people had a whole popular movement of millions against Jovenel Moïse, against the prior dictator, the prior U.S. lackey. There's been three installations of U.S. power through this political party called the PHTK. That acronym would translate as the Haitian Bald-Headed Party, because their original lackey, his name was Michel Martelly. And well, let's just say he had a haircut,
like yours.
You know, similar to mine. I compare myself to a Haitian dictator like Michel Martelly. And it, the gangsterization of the country started under him in 2010, in 2011. There was a power crisis, so Hillary Clinton, who else, flies down in the name of the State Department. She's the Secretary of State, and she benights Michel Martelly. He becomes the next president. Very little popular support. You know, participatory democracy in Haiti has been missing since 2001, when Jean-Bertrand Aristide was voted into office. He was the people's candidate. He represented the ghettos from below. He campaigned on a slogan of from abject misery to dignified poverty. Such a humble slogan, right? And the colonizers of yesteryear and the colonizers of today refused to even allow that. So there were two coups against Haiti. And this is in 1991 coup, 2004 coup. U.S. Marines involved both times under Clinton, then under Bush, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, Democrat, Republican, same imperial policy, whether it's against Palestine or Bolivia, or aggression against China, aggression against Haiti and Nicaragua, and all the way down the line. And what the Haitians say every day is that they want to have strong diplomatic and commercial relations with the Mexicans and with the Venezuelans and with the Bolivarian camp, and they don't want to be invaded again by the Brazilians. And very shamefully, you know, and that's where I met Pasta. Pasta and I were covering the Brazilian elections about a year and a half ago. And really the biggest spot on Lula's record, he was a part of this core group, Brazil still is, and they spearheaded along with the U.S., France, Canada, the neo-colonial partners. Brazil was the one that supplied the troops who had occupied the favelas, Rocinha, Fazendinha. So they took their expert counterinsurgency training from the favelas of Brazil and then went into Haiti as occupiers. They called it the stabilization, the UN stabilization mission. The acronym was MINUSTA, but the Haitians saw it as a mission of humiliation, a mission of destabilization. So this is all the context that begins to explain today who's taken power in the ghettos of Port-au-Prince, a city of 2.5 million, similar population to Gaza. One-fifth of Port-au-Prince is now without their homes. They've been burned out of their homes by these death squads. And that's what I've been documenting. Let's at least share an image or two just to take people into Haiti. This is me here documenting some of the barricades. And this is no man's land behind me. Some of these, this was like the front lines of where these gangs are attacking. These are community mobilizations. This is where the masses of people, this is where I was staying. Everyone check out Molegaf. Molegaf are the Black Panthers of Haiti. This is one of the important grassroots organization. So you have massive community mobilizations against the death squads. The problem is that the people are outgunned. So the research that I've been doing is, well, Haiti doesn't produce guns. The Dominican Republic doesn't produce guns. But there's this huge mystery. How are there almost 1 million illegal guns in Haiti? Well, voila, the U.S.'s gun crisis is also the neo-colonies.
Are guns banned in Haiti for the population? Because in Mexico, there are a lot of gun deaths, but I believe there's an actual gun ban in Mexico. So they shouldn't. So I'm just wondering, only because maybe, you know, they put those laws in so the people cannot rebel.
Yeah, I never even thought about it, actually, you know, because there's such impunity. Whether a law is in place, it would be paper law anyway. So I never even thought to actually pose that
question. Let me ask. So you said Moise was a plant. He's a U.S. guy. And then he was taken out, though, also by the U.S. Is that correct?
Certainly. You know, there's a brand new book that just dropped. I have a book review coming out in NACLA, the North American Congress of Latin America, tomorrow. I should have grabbed the book.
It's in my
living room. It's called The AIDS State, and it's by Jake Johnston, a researcher and author who's at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's the true expert on the dynamics of the July 7th, 2000. 21 assassination of Jovenel Moise. I've looked at the headlines. I've read, you know, was Martin Moise somehow involved? His wife, you know, a lot of times these are such distracting, sensationalistic headlines. I work within the Dominican media and they had a bunch of questions on it. I didn't see anything that looked to me terribly valid, but it's like they want to just throw everybody.
Yeah, I can't believe she was a part of that. She was
super duper, though.
Not like, you know, she was super messed up. And he was ready for, I think he was aware that they were coming for him. I doubt, you mm-hmm. know, well, I don't know. But I found it hard to believe when they're out to get her and she's in hiding. I don't know if that's still the case. And I just figured, well, they're trying to get her because she probably knows stuff.
Yeah. And there was a key detail there. And I think it speaks to the internalized colonial complex of many Haitians, the Haitian bourgeoisie, the Haitian oligarchs. When the Colombian paramilitaries and their American and informants and guides, when they charge on Jovenel's mansion, his complex, they yell in English, DEA, DEA. And the entire presidential guard throws down their guns and jumps down on their stomachs and puts their hands up. So it's amazing. As soon as they heard English, those colonial, colonized fear.
Yeah. Because, well, it's hopeless then at that point. You know, it's hopeless. You do not have a fighting chance at the whole Western world coming at you. So how did, so Henry, I was confused by the succession after Moise. Like, it's impossible to figure this stuff out just reading the newspaper that we get. Like, you're saying, like, can't figure out about Moise. But I've heard you say that Henri was, like, put in place by us. He was our choice. And you would think that he'd have been more successful if he had that force behind him. I just found it impossible to sort through.
Haiti, you know, as Jemima Pierre, Dr. Pierre from the Black Alliance for Peace, she was on Democracy Now! And what she was explaining was Haiti is the colonial laboratory of the United States. They're trying to use the Global Fragility Act to justify a longer occupation of Haiti. If we go back the last three, 4 decades, Haiti has been occupied by U.S. troops and foreign troops for the bulk of those years. Of course, there was the 1915 to 1934 U.S. military occupation of Haiti. So Haiti fits every definition of the neo-colony. And the Haitians are asking, is it 2024 or is it 1492? Is it 1620? You know, how one of the most common slogans in Haiti is C'est grand monde tête nouillée. We are adults. We can decide for ourselves. Why does a sovereign people have to assert in 2024 that they're adults and they don't need U.S. paternalism to decide their future? Deadly paternalism.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And it's not like they could ever really, they can't not possibly be a threat to us. Like, they don't have weapons. They're in our sphere, but we have no justification for invading. That's why I felt like there was so much press for a while there of Haitians coming across the Mexican border. It's like, well, they do that so that you have a reason that American people will say, well, it's our problem now, so we have to fix it. But of course, that stuff is all totally manufactured.
And that's why Ron DeSantis was on the front page of CNN and Fox and every newspaper today saying that the Haitian migrants are going to so they're preparing everything. It's an informational war. The war on Haiti, first and foremost, is an informational war. And the ideas that I'm sharing, this is just my training since 1998, working with the Haitian left, working with the anti-imperialist grassroots forces. We got to talk about barbecue, and we got to talk about previous, invasions. And I'm just translating so much of what they have taught me. I've been studying Creole since 1998. It's a very anti-colonial language. It's a language filled of Haitian resistance and Haitian ancestry. There's been an all-out assault on Haitian spirituality. Really no surprise. But, voodoo is not a negative thing. It's Afro-Haitian spirituality. It's in the music. Like, you all just saw voodoo, that little clip from the march. You heard the music. They're playing their own voodoo music. But when we hear voodoo in the U.S. through Hollywood, and it's all this negativity. So as soon as I heard demonized. The cannibalism headline, I was like, oh, man, they really.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that. I did not reach out for that reason.
Yeah.
I had not heard that.
No, I'm not. I know. You're a conscious talk but show host.
But I hadn't read that. But yeah, the voodoo, I know. I was watching some TV show once, and the Haitians were, looked like they were doing voodoo, and they were singing, and my daughter, young daughter in grammar school, she was in Catholic school, started singing the song they were singing. And I said, well, how would you know that song? And she said, well, it's just the Hail Mary in French. So it's like a syncretic religion. It's like two different, it's got a lot of Catholic and Christian influence, their spirituality. And though I actually only knew the Haitians because we went to the church in Spring Valley, the Catholic church where they all went.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we'd even go to the mass in French, even though we don't speak French. It still counts.
Yeah.
But
Haiti is an extremely Catholic country. but you have the fusion with the voodoo. So it is possible to fuse these two different spiritualities. Yeah. And that plays out across Haiti, though. Catholic Haitians, if you mention voodoo, they're basically going to regurgitate everything you would expect from Christians against the Afro Church.
Oh, they hate it? Okay. Sure. I didn't know that. Sure. I mean, I wasn't really witness to any of the voodoo stuff, but I did know they were very religious. The people I worked with, the people we went to church with were extremely spiritual and religious from a Catholic perspective in any case. So as so I'm the voodoo wave sweeping the U.S. is not consistent with my experience from Haitian immigrants.
No, 100%. I mean, the French arrived, as the old saying goes, from Desmond Tutu in South Africa. The French arrived with a gun in one hand and a Bible in the other. And then there's the famous quote where they say, the colonizer arrived. And he told the colonized, you know, close your eyes. And when the colonized opened up their eyes, the land was gone, but they then had a Bible.
Well, I will say the opiate of the masses thing, I do worry about that a little bit because I get so hopeless in the world today, reading the news, following the news. And then I just think, you know, I just have faith in God. And I always think, I'm like, you know, that is a good way to get people to accept, you know, to accept what's happening. But I still do it.
I'm a spiritual, you know, I'm a God-fearing spiritual man myself. So this is not casting aspersions on anyone's spiritual. I'm a praying man myself. But in Haiti, I can't tell you how many times, because as an ethnographer, as a sociologist, as a guest staying in different homes, of course, I was in all types of, they call it peristyle. That's like the voodoo temples. Then, of course, I was in the Catholic cathedrals. And really, evangelical religion is growing, you know, immensely. And I remember the Catholic preachers and the evangelical preachers saying, if you need a job, if you need more money, if you're trying to travel to see your family, you know, where? Well, of course, in Miami or New York, you know, come and pray more. So I think that, you know, Marxian axiom of the religion is the opium of the masses. And that's why they shut down Jean-Bertrand Aristide, because he was a proponent of liberation theology, of using the church to build consciousness. Both coups in Haiti were coups against the legacy of liberation theology. They called it the Tile Église, the church of the people, of the people, you know, the humble, of Amba, the people below. So, yeah, there's really a war for Haiti's soul as well in spiritual terms. So, well, the question of Jimmy Chérizier of Barbecue, that's been a main headline in the world. The Haitian people say that he's another thug, he's another gangster. The word I heard the most since 2021, this is something that I've been looking at for three years, because February 7th, 2021, there's a massive insurrection, because first it's Michel Martelly. Haitian people were extremely frustrated with him. They had Bayi Lock, locking down the entire country, blockades, people's popular barricades against Michel Martelly, then against Jovenel Moïse. You have the Petro-Caribbean scandal. Venezuela sent some $6.6 billion in petro-internationalism, oil solidarity, oil diplomacy from Hugo Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution. All of that money disappears. The bureaucrats, the sycophants of Michel Martelly, of the PHTK, Jovenel Moïse. So there's this whole movement against Jovenel Moïse of hundreds of thousands. I marched alongside hundreds of thousands. But no Haitian wanted to murder. I mean, they may have said vitriolic words. We all use vitriolic words. But all of a sudden he's murdered. But that took, again, the decision out of the hands of the Haitian people, because after that, there was a carte blanche that no one could march anymore. There was martial law. There were curfews. So the entire movement, and I was on, I think it was the second to last flight out of Haiti when he was murdered. So I had just left. And then Ariel Henry is put into power. And Monica, you spoke to it as quick as the colonizer. Walter Rodney said that the colonizer is a one-armed bandit. And if people haven't studied Dr. Walter Rodney, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, one of the great anti-colonial scholars of generations past. And he said, using that colonialism as a one-armed bandit. So as quick as they impose Ariel Henry they decided last week, they called up Ariel Henry, according to the Miami Herald. He's almost landing in Port-au-Prince. They reroute his plane. Then the Dominicans say, you can't land here. And Anthony Blinken and the State Department say, well, you're no longer the prime minister. So we really have to ask the people of the United States, for how long? I can't say we, because I've never appointed or imposed any president or dictator on any other country. So I can't say us. I don't think you have either, right, Monica. I don't suspect so. But for how long can the United States dictate who the leadership should be of Nicaragua, of China, of Russia, of Zimbabwe, of Vietnam? It's preposterous.
For as long as we pay for the weapons.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I'll just show you the some of my latest research here. Guns, gangs, and neo-colonialism. Hundreds of thousands of guns made in the United States propel a gang war that has turned Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince, into a war zone. This is the organization that I work with. Clearly, MOLEGAF stands for the Movement for Equality and Liberation for All Haitians. This is Dominique Raissin. This is an incredible popular leader. He survived at least three assassination attempts that I've documented. Here we're meeting. This is actually from that People's Church. This organization was an organization of young men and women. The women aren't in the picture, but this was in the north of Haiti. Caribbean Blood, U.S. Sharks. A Smuggler's Paradise. This is Chidensky Jean-Baptiste. He was assassinated last year. This is another Haitian revolutionary. I'm writing a tribute. This is Tedina, another incredible revolutionary. And that's the lie that probably hurts me the most. And that's why I try to do this this work. I mean, I've never received a cent for it. It's all out of love. You'll never make a living as an anti-imperialist, in case anyone thought, you know.
I'm sure of that. So, but I have a question for you about these people, the leaders from the grassroots leaders. Haiti has been in such a mess for so long. Its institutions and population, everything have been undermined the way you're saying, like Africa is deliberately underdeveloped. If they were to actually rise to power, if somehow they could chase out the Americans and all that means, I mean, could one of those guys just slide in and run the country, or would it be doomed to failure already? Like, you know, what would it take to actually make it a functioning place?
Yeah, so
run by the people.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's really so simple in a sense, yet so difficult. I heard a lot of Haitians saying the past week, poor us, so far from God, so close to the United States. You know, the Haitians don't want to be the backyard of the U.S. And the slogan of Famille Lavalas, that was the party any Haitian watchers, supporters will remember, Lavalas. Lavalas has gone through, I'd say, at least a generation, if not two generations, of stiff repression. But Lavalas, which means flood in English, this was a massive popular movement. And what they're demanding is sali public, a public exit, a unified a public solution. And what that means is bringing in all the popular sectors. So Haitian women have their democratic representation. The ghettos of Haiti have their democratic representation. The voodooism, the practitioners of spirituality, they have their representation. And all the way down the line, the peasants and the ghettos, and to bring all of them together, they all have different votes, and they're the ones who can then say, we're going to appoint this commission, and we're going to decide on a prime minister, and we're going to have regional representation. But of course, the U.S. will never allow that. And what the formulation of the Haitian people, if everyone remembers Jean-Claude Duvalier, Francois Duvalier, Baby Doc, and Papa Doc,
oh, definitely
through the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way to 86, the Cold War, which is really a global class struggle, the anti-communism of the Duvaliers is why the U.S. gets behind them, and they rule through the Tonton Macoutes. And what the people of Haiti are saying today is that these paramilitaries, these mercenaries, are the Tonton Macoutes of the 21st century. They're doing the same exact thing, but I would actually say worse, because in the times of the Tonton Macoutes, Every leftist was murdered. Every popular leader was assassinated. Every political prisoner. How many Haitians had to go into exile in the 60s and 70s until the popular uprising called the Déchoucage. Déchoucage would mean overthrowing everything, 1986. And that's when you have the formation of the Lavalas movement. So every U.S. action has to be analyzed within this context of the need of U.S. colonial power to make sure that there is no popular option. There is no true participatory democracy.
But why is Haiti so important and always has been to the U.S.? What, I mean, I've actually heard speculation that there's oil under Haiti, but it's got to be more than that. And I feel like what makes Haiti such a primary target?
Why was Grenada, a country of 100,000 students?
That was so weird. I don't know.
1983, Ronald Reagan has this big invasion of Grenada. I was in Grenada 2 years ago. It you know, in the Bronx,
weird.
There's 100,000 people in one of the projects next to me. But it's not weird. It's completely predictable. It's completely scientific. Imperialism dictates that no swath, no corner of the globe can be free. That's why they've gone.
Especially on this hemisphere. I did notice as soon as Biden took over that they seem to be kind of having this idea of putting down another iron curtain between East and West, for sure. And I feel like it was because the U.S. or the Western powers realized that they could not actually achieve world hegemony. They weren't going to actually be able to run the entire world. So might as well divide it back again. So at least you have total control over this half. And then they renewed their interest in the Western Hemisphere. And that's when, like, Kamala Harris and other people were talking about, they had their, the Organization of American States, and they were there talking about how we have to, like, bank every last peasant and, you know, everybody. They just seem to take a renewed interest in totally dominating the Western Hemisphere. I feel like they focus. So you're right. It's not Haiti. It's not Grenada. It's, you know, was it Bolivia? Where is the guy who was chased out because he was going to build a lithium factory?
Yeah.
Ecuador, you know, like Ecuador, they put that guy I was like, this guy seems like an American puppet. He was born in Miami. I was like, oh, whatever. I didn't have to keep investigating that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Pedro Castillo.
Yeah. So you're right. It's everybody. Yeah.
Pedro Castillo suffered the coup in Peru about a year and a half ago. Evo Morales in 2019, the OAS put the rubber stamp on it. So it's very consistent with U.S. Foreign policy.
Right.
So you asked Monica about the uses of Haiti. Why is Haiti important? Economically, certainly there's many resources across Haiti. I mean, Haiti has lush green mounds. There has been incredible, you know, centuries of deforestation, incredible deforestation, the legacy of French colonialism, the legacy of the U.S. Marines occupation from 1915 to 1934. But Haiti has gold. Haiti has iridium. Haiti has natural gas reserves. So it's definitely wealth. There's the sweatshops of Haiti. The Clintons have a sweatshop in the north. For years, all U.S. baseballs were made in Haiti, while Disney World produced so much of its goods. So there's the economic uses of Haiti.
Humans.
The diplomatic uses of Haiti, they need Haiti's vote in the OAS. They need Haiti's vote against China. Haiti's one of the last countries that still recognizes Taiwan, doesn't recognize...
Are those votes weighted by population?
No. They're just votes in general.
Okay.
There's just diplomatic uses for Haiti as well. I would go back to the colonial laboratory thesis, right? They want to try out this whole global fragility.
Oh, yes.
So now the U.S., if the U.S. suspects that migration, so get ready for all the headlines. They're going to open up Guantanamo for the Haitians, just like in the 1980s and the early 1990s again. Didn't Barack Obama say he was going to close down Guantanamo? What happened, Monica?
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, no, we can't talk. That was his first promise. You know, people were, in the Bronx, people were shooting off the roof, celebrating. And I was like, I'm telling y'all, ain't shit going to change. Mark my words.
No. Cautiously, in the immortal words of Aaron McGruder, of Boondocks fame, I'm cautiously pessimistic, he said when Obama was elected.
And then shortly after, I was in Western Africa when Obama came into office. And of course, you know, Obama has the Kenyan, you know, his father was Kenyan. Mm-hmm. So they were so excited in Africa. And I'm like, this is just imperialism and white supremacy.
I think his father was MI6, actually. Mm. I believe so. I think that's a fact.
So, speaking of Kenya, so what the U.S. is trying to do, because the idea of U.S. boots on the ground, the U.S. is $300 billion deep in this proxy war in Ukraine. The U.S. is now harassing Venezuela, trying to weaponize Guyanese nationalism. You know, Nancy Pelosi and everyone else is egging on a war on China through Taiwan and, of course, the genocide in Gaza. So the U.S. foreign policy establishment didn't feel like they were capable of carrying out another occupation of Haiti. So what the U.S. is trying to do, similar to colonizers' past, the U.S. will give the $333 million to the Kenyan government, to William Ruto, a neoliberal stooge. But the Kenyan parliament and the Kenyan legislation has said no so many times, so they can't push it through Kenya. So they're trying to use Benin. They're trying to use Chad. They're trying to use the Bahamas. They're trying to use Guyana. They're trying to use Jamaica. They're trying to use any country that'll accept the U.S. funds, and they'll be the boots on the ground, the cannon fodder to carry out what will be the fourth intervention, invasion, and occupation of Haiti in 100 years. So everyone should be prepared for all of the headlines. Now you can have your critical anti-imperialist media literacy ready, because all of the headlines, like today, are going to tell you. So the new thing is, if the U.S. suspects that this migration could destabilize the U.S. or another country or an ally, that's going to justify the U.S. then invading a country.
Right.
Think how quick they could use that against Venezuela after how many years of an economic war on Venezuela, another topic that I research frequently.
I mean, it feels like the dominoes are just being set up all over the place. I did a show today about they're totally setting up for U.S. boots on the ground in Gaza. I worry about what they're planning for Yemen. Macron said that he wanted NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine. You see this stuff in Haiti. I mean, they're talking about getting, you know, literally actual invasions. I hope these are just scare tactics, because it would be impossible to fight war on that many fronts, especially invasions. They are imperialistic invasions.
Oof.
I don't know. You know, it's very scary. And I actually read a Paul Johnson's a famous like mainstream historian, and I was reading something he wrote years ago. It's like he was kind of trying to puzzle through why, when the opinion a foreign population has of America is inversely correlated by how much aid America gives that country. And he's like, people just resent being charity cases. And I'm like, it's not that people resent being charity cases. It's that American aid entered the country to take over its government and undermine the sovereignty of the people. That's why, and that they know it. I mean, even, well, whatever, we could go on and on about everything, but I don't want to keep you because I know that you have been on round the clock. So I want to talk about this Help Us Save Solino Haiti. It's a GoFundMe that you have established. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. And just on the point you were just making, this maxim in Latin America, he who lends commands, he who borrows obeys. So all of these World Bank and IMF structures,
and
that's how they get these countries into, just like us with credit card debt or student loan debt, and then they have
and national debt. Who knows who's going to come calling for that?
Yeah.
You know, we have 30 something trillion dollars.
My goodness.
You know,
so we shall see. That's why they have so much. That's why they have just absolute hatred and aggression towards China. So many of those bonds are owned by the Chinese.
Yeah.
Can you ever picture the U.S. bigwigs, the oligarchs, like going to the Chinese?
Yeah.
Here's the money we owe you. No, they're going to wave the.
It's not resolving in this paradigm. But I do worry also about when we commit like physical war or economic war on these countries and drive them into poverty and homelessness and refugee. So then they migrate to your country instead of the way, like when my grandparents came over 100 years ago, they wanted a better life. They were willing to walk away from their culture to get it. And they embraced our like consumer producer culture here. And if they couldn't, they went back. Like there weren't even, none of my parents went through any kind of, they just went through a health screening. They didn't have to apply for any kind of green card or whatever. And one of my, or the great grandparents, whatever, went back to Syria. And what happens, though, the reason, you know, just exacerbates the immigration conflict, because what you've done, you welcome the refugees after you've destroyed their country and they're pissed at you. So no wonder we've got, you know, ill will. People don't, it doesn't work anymore because of, you know, in part because of that. And I think that's part of the plan, too, just conflict.
Yeah.
They like conflict.
Yeah, no question. So Solino is one of the ghettos of Port-au-Prince. It's one of the biggest communities of more than 100,000 people. They're under constant attack from these paramilitaries armed with U.S. guns. The way the Haitians explain it is that there are the gangsters up top with the suits and ties who are in D.C., who are in Miami. They coordinate with the Haitian oligarchs. But then they give all the guns to the gangsters who have on flip-flops, just translating from Creole, right? And those are the enforcers in the ghetto. A lot of these gangsters with flip-flops, the everyday gangsters, they're 18-year-old kids who don't have enough to eat, and they're holding a $5,000 automatic Israeli Galil or an M16. You know, it's ridiculous. Just a few more images to close out. The gasoline in Haiti right now, the gasoline when I was there was at 15 U.S. dollars. Last year is at 20 U.S. dollars for 1 gallon. So you have these massive lines. There's a transportation crisis. This is one of the leaders over there, Islanda, different solidarity events and conferences. This is one of my last days in Haiti, but they built these, this is another barricade. They have to build these massive, barricades, and the Haitian people need all the solidarity that they can get. This is a people to people fundraiser. This was an event we did in solidarity with Palestine. The Haitians identify often as the Palestine of the Caribbean, of the most forgotten. So people can go here, check out Molegaf, help us save Solino. This was a report that I did comparing Gaza to Port-au-Prince. And here it is. This is the community Solino. This is Jean Renal. This is Isaiah. These are leaders there in the community. I explain why the death squads are attacking. Here is T. Jojo, Georgie, Luco. So these are the these are the people on the ground struggling and fighting, and they just ask for our comprehension and human compassion and solidarity. So anybody who can help, we've raised some 6,000 right now, because every night they do, they collect funds so they can pay different volunteers who have to man the barricades, because if they're attacked in the middle of the night, it's like a whole, it's like the Spanish Civil War or the Soviet Union resisting the Nazis. The whole neighborhood is organized and mobilized to resist.
That's when you know you have a just war, when you're actually defending your own property. You know, like we're always told that we have to go to war, we have to send guns, we have to send soldiers. I mean, and our boots on the ground is somebody else's ground always. So, you know, when it's your ground.
How did our oil get under that Iraqi?
Yes, I know. It's outrageous.
I've been trying to figure it out for so many years.
I know. I do wonder about that with Haiti, if they have even some oil under there. Well, that's fantastic. And how can you tell people a little bit about your work and how they can follow you or read some of your books? And actually, you also do a lot of work on nutrition and health and that kind of thing, which is probably good for your soul.
Yeah, I have a book out on life foods, nutrition and raw foods and vegetarianism. And for me, as I got older as a boxer, that transition is called shedding that which is not us. But I will show you my latest book here. Here it comes. So I put out this book about 2 weeks ago. This is Genocide, 48 Poems for Gaza, documenting what I've been watching, what the world has been watching really since October 7th and the children of the craters. I talk a lot about these massive craters that have existed in Gaza way before October 7th and the craters from the Israeli and U.S. bombs and the children grow up around these craters. It looks like the surface of the moon. So people can check out that book in solidarity with Palestine.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much, Professor Danny Shaw. You have such an interesting resume and you do such fascinating work. Really knowing those languages, that you know the languages of the people, really gives you a unique perspective into how they feel and what they're going through. And it's just, it really, we have no other access to that side of things than people who really get on the ground on it. No Pasta does it as well. So I thank him for introducing us to you. And thanks so much. That was so fascinating. Thank you all for listening. This is Monica Perez.